Welcome to another episode of the Replant Bootcamp, the podcast for church renewal leaders where we listen, learn, and laugh together with boots on the ground church leaders. I'm your host, Jimbo Stewart. This podcast is sponsored by Church QuickSight by 180 Digital. Getting a website that your visitors and members will love doesn't have to be hard. Learn more at churchquicksight.com. Here we are back at the boot camp, back at it again. Hope you're ready for the next episode. I've got my good friend, one of my best friends in the world, Pastor Matt McNaughton, coming to us while I'm in Florida anticipating snow, where Matt normally is, where he lives as well. Matt has abandoned me to the great white north.
Yeah, I saw the cold coming in and said, I have to get out of Florida. And so we decided to go to Maine for the... As I told you right before we hopped on, I'm selfishly praying that it does not snow in Florida because I don't want to miss it.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's Floridians, I think, are a mix of excited and scared right now of what could happen if we get any snow that stays on the ground.
Well, on Sunday, all the folks from up north, they're like, it's not going to snow. Like, they're not concerned one bit. The Floridians are like, we may never leave again. We are stuck inside.
Man, I'm excited to have you on the podcast. I've been bringing you on more and more to talk specifically about bivocational. And it's a ministry you have really kind of started to lean into with your work on the NAM Replant team. And so I got a great question from one of our favorite listeners this week. Josh Wally was calling and just saying, hey, how do you deal with the guilt of not always being available as a bivocational pastor? Because we all know that part of being a pastor is the midnight phone calls, the, you know, phone call during dinner because somebody has been rushed to the hospital or some crisis has happened and they want their spiritual leader there to pray for them, to comfort them, to be by their side. And that's a normal, reasonable expectation for the most part. But the reality of it is, even if you're not bivocational, you're not always 100% accessible. But especially if you're bivocational, it makes it a lot more difficult. And if you don't have a job that allows you to step away, you can feel like really torn in those moments because you can't just clock out and leave work and go to the hospital. And you know, it can feel like you're derelict in your duties because here I am working at my job when I really should be by that hospital bed is what you feel like. And so, what would be kind of your initial response to somebody asking, how do you deal with the guilt of not always being accessible for those moments as a bivocational pastor?
Yeah, when you first brought the question in front of me, my first thought was like, man, that's a pastor that has a heart like Jesus. That was my first thought. You see throughout the first, in the Gospels, Jesus is looking out on the crowds of people and he has compassion on them. Like they... sheep without a shepherd. And so you see this comparison of Jesus as the good shepherd, and he calls under shepherds to shepherd his flock. And I think that's intentional because we're intended as pastors to have the same heart for our people that Jesus has for these people. And so when we are pulled in different directions and we can't get to them right away, we're reminded of our humanity, where we're bound by time and all the various limitations, but we're reminded of our good shepherd who models this love for his people. And so it's a tough place to be, because I think if that guilt goes away of not being able to be with your people, then it might be time to step back and take some inventory of like why you don't feel that pastoral care and longing to be with them in their time of need. But it's one of those things that, all right, as I'm going to be a bivocational pastor, for probably to provide for my family, and I'm called to this church. How do I balance this heart that's pulled in so many directions, where I don't become crushed by the guilt of not being able to do everything I feel called to do?
Yeah, I would even say, just to edit your words a little bit, I don't know that we need to feel guilt, but we should feel a weight.
Yes, that's good.
It shouldn't be flippant, like, oh no, I can't be there.
Right.
And I would say it could at seasons maybe even go the other end of the spectrum. You're like, oh man, I'm kind of glad I'm at work. I don't have to go deal with that right now.
Yeah.
And that's a light on the dashboard to let you know something's not right in your pastoral heart, because that's not. I would echo and agree with you that, like, the fact that question is being asked is evidence that this pastor cares deeply for his people and he's shepherding them well. I also thought about, and one of the things I said to him on the phone was, Jesus intentionally did not show up when Lazarus was dying.
Correct.
Now, Jesus had a much better plan than any of us can pull off. But I'm saying that to say, like, Jesus probably has a reason in his sovereign will, in his sovereign wisdom, why you can't show up at that moment. And and I don't know that we'll ever know what that is, but I legitimately just, a lot of times in my life, just try to find comfort in, like, I don't know, God had a plan for this. On my way to church this morning, where I'm in the interim, my truck broke down. And instead of getting frustrated and anxious, I was like, well, the Lord's got a plan. He's got a reason. There's, this happened for some reason. And I have no idea what that reason is, but I do just trust that he does have a reason. And so part of that is we got to trust that God had a reason. But I also think it speaks a lot. If I'm trying to think now, put myself in the mind of the church member that's sitting in the hospital bed, the fact that you, after a long, hard day of work, drove, an hour north, hour and a half north, and came to see me in the hospital, that would speak the world to me. I mean, that would mean so much. That would show so much care to me that you still did that. And at the same time, you don't have to do that every time.
No.
Because you do have a family at home and you need to pastor and shepherd them as well. The other side of it that I thought of was, I think this is a good thing in that it helps church members recognize that you're not always available. Because if we behave in such a way that we train people to expect us to always be 100% available, then that's what they'll grow to expect. And then the moment you don't meet that expectation, it's going to create issues. But if they know, hey, here's the reality. He has a other job. He has a family. He cannot always be accessible. Then that, I think, is a good pattern and expectation to set as well.
Yeah, everybody, when it comes to bivocational ministry, the pastor, the church, everybody's learning the boundaries of what this ministry looks like. If the church understands we've called a pastor to be bivocational, there's grace and understanding that should be there. It's not always easy and as clear and simple as that. But I think when you're from the church member standpoint, I don't think ever been in a hospital room where the church member is mad that I'm there. it's an encouragement to them. And what most church members don't realize is usually we leave just as encouraged, that in the midst of hurt and whatever they're navigating, they say something that encourages you. And you're like, I hope I have the same heart if I'm in this position. And so to drive an hour and a half after work to go and sit with a church member, what a beautiful, beautiful thing that is. To see the heart of and love for a pastor. And I love pastors like that. That long day of work, middle of the night, you wake up, and as soon as you can get there, you're going to get there.
Yeah. So talk to us about like what, how do you decide? You can't be accessible for everything. Yeah. Even when you're not at work, you can't always be everywhere.
Right.
So how does a pastor go about making that decision? What filter could they use to triage what it is they need to put their attention into?
Yeah. What's an emergency? What needs me there ASAP? What can wait a day or two? Because an emergency to some people is not an emergency at all. If we've been in pastoral ministry for any length of time, we know that. And so I think you have to, for me, I guess I'll talk about what I've done personally, because it's case by case scenario. So as much as you try to lay out a process of triage, it fluctuates and it doesn't fit context to context. So what I've done is this a matter of spiritual importance? Is someone calling me and it's my marriage is falling apart. It's a crisis of faith. Usually I'll give them a call first. And then I can check in, when I'm able to. But plus what I've learned is, most people understand that if you send a text message that you may not be able to respond right away. I mean, we discourage driving while texting. I mean, in a meeting, you're tied up. And so if you see that text message and say, okay, first I have to think about my response here. I have some time to respond to that. When it comes to those type of things, I can maybe delay it a couple hours. But when it's a hospital visit, what type of event is going on? Is it something trauma? Were they in a car accident? Is it a matter of life and death? Is it they're having some issues and they need to go get checked out? What's the case? And so knowing your people, I shared this with a group of elders from some churches locally last week. Knowing your people, I think, also means knowing their medical history a little bit. In the sense that if they've had cancer in the past, if they've had certain ailments that sends them to the hospital, then you can understand, okay, they've been in this position before. I know that it's just a routine check-in. I'll call them and I'll pray with them over the phone, just do a check-in that way. But in some cases, like for instance, we had a man in our church, he's 44, had a stroke. He's healthy. He's probably the healthiest person I know, or top three. And, it's one of those situations. He had a stroke, and I started evaluating all of my life choices of, man,
he's having a stroke. That guy who takes that good of care.
Whoa, boy, I need to start drinking more water. It lasted 2 days, those 2 days, I drank more water. And so he has a stroke. I'm talking to his wife, and I get to the hospital as soon as I can. I also know that during the first part of the morning, they're doing a bunch of tests. They're going to do all these scans. And so I know that's also not a great time to show up during all of that. So those are that's a lot. It's a lot to just process, because you're trying to learn the medical field. You're trying to learn the people. Some people are like older ladies I have found, they feel, depending on the nature of why they're there, it's inappropriate that another man is in the room with them, given their state. And not inappropriate is not the word. It's,
well, they feel a little bit embarrassed about it.
Embarrassed.
They desire to present themselves in the best way possible.
Correct.
Dress nice and have their makeup done. And
correct.
It's definitely not the state they're in.
Correct.
And so it can be overwhelming for them.
And we don't care as pastors, because we want to be in there, hold their hand and love on them. but we know, like, hey, their heart is like, this is very uncomfortable for them. And so you're navigating all of this, which I believe, to kind of wrap up this part of it, is it buys you just a little time before you have to go right to the hospital.
Yeah. On the, and I would go back to what you're talking about with the text message thing again, in the same way you are not always physically available. I don't think you should normally respond immediately to text messages.
I agree.
Because again, you start to train your people to assume I can text him and get a response really fast.
Yep.
So even if you can respond really fast, there are some people that I intentionally let it sit for a minute.
Yep.
Because I don't want them to get in the habit of like texting me, assuming I'm going to respond immediately.
Correct. And the questions are like, if I get a question of someone I'm discipling that's asking a Bible question, that's going to take priority over the question I get about someone who's just dabbing into random theology topics that, you know, we could talk about next week.
Yeah. So I think part of that, again, is learning to set the expectations. And it's one of the things you talk about with Bivocational is kind of setting those expectations and the culture of both for the pastor and the congregation of understanding, you know, what is reality? What can we actually expect from our pastor in this? Yeah. And, you know, it's been interesting for me. I've been bivocational pastor before, but now I find myself as an interim, which is like a whole nother level of, you know, not always available. And so like I have one day of the week that I just give that day entirely to the church. And then if anything comes up, I'm probably not dealing with it till that day the next week. And setting those expectations and trying to set those early on. So in the same way as a bivocational pastor, I do think it's important that let's recap. One, it's good that you feel this way.
Yes.
Feel the weight, but not the guilt.
Yep.
Feel the weight, but not the pressure. And sit in that and pray for them and care for them, but also just trust the Lord and his sovereignty that he's got a reason for the way it's working out.
Yeah.
Two, figure out how to kind of triage and think through, you know, what legitimately requires an immediate response. And I would argue there are very few things that require an immediate response. And even if, you know, this somebody told me this early on, and I was so grateful they did. If a couple calls you at 9 o'clock at night and they're yelling and arguing at each other and they're like, we're about to get divorced, you need to come over here. Don't go over there.
No.
You'll only be there. You'll only be there at 10 o'clock at night trying to deal with their marriage. It didn't fall apart overnight and it's not going to get fixed overnight.
Yeah.
And one more night is not going to kill them.
Yeah.
And so you just say, that sounds like a stressful situation. What we probably need to do is schedule an appointment.
Yep.
Where we can sit down in my office together and talk through this. And if they get mad, that just demonstrates their immaturity, not your lack of performance. And so thinking through how to triage those things, I do believe is important.
Yeah, because it's even, all right, setting systems in place in my own life, that's not going to have me just dealing with everything all the time. And so I have, you know, I've set up, when your phone goes, it doesn't go to sleep. I can't think of what I'm calling it.
Do not disturb.
Do not disturb. Thank you. I set it up at a certain time. And so there's only certain people that I can get through, but I'm still checking. And then every once in a while, usually check right before bed, just to make sure there hasn't been something I need to respond to right away. But then in those cases, I respond like, hey, I was with my family last night. I wasn't able to respond. If they get mad at that, then I'm like, well, maybe this is why your marriage is in the spot it's in. You know, that's where my flesh wants to go. But so putting those boundaries in place for your own health, your own spiritual health, helps you triage those incoming calls.
Yeah. And so then, all right, last piece, let's hit on for just a minute. You're not the only one,
correct?
That can do this.
Yep.
You need to be raising up some other deacons, elders, leaders, somebody, especially, here's the deal, especially if you're bivocational.
Yes.
I think far too often we're like, oh, we're not a big enough church for all that. No.
Yep.
Like,
you
got people, and this is how the body plays its role. Let the body be the body, and you're not the only one that can serve in this way. And that's another expectation. You've got to train the people in the congregation to understand that you don't have special access.
Right.
You're not on the main line to heaven, and you have better access than everyone else.
Correct.
We do believe in priesthood of the believer.
Yep.
And so it doesn't have to be you that shows up at all times.
Yep. This is because of being bivocational. There is what I've learned is that more people feel like they can be a part of the work of ministry, because it's the bivocational pastor is like, I'm doing what you're doing throughout the week too. And so this is something that conversations I'm having recently, that the church member sees this and says, oh, okay, so he's doing this. I could be a part of this too. And I think it's just the Lord working in their heart. And so bridging the gap between this triage conversation and raising up other people is because a lot of the times I'm responding maybe in the evening or early morning, I can ask the question, hey, is this church member willing, and is this situation possible where I can bring someone with me to visit them? And so that helps them see it's not just me. It helps equip someone else. Because there are going to be times when you're just like, I can't get there, but this person can. And we've equipped our church to understand that we're the body of Christ. We're doing this together. And I'll get there as soon as I can. This happened early last year. I was away. I was out of town, and one of our widows at our church passed away. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get back there. And so another elder had the flexibility. He's like, I'll be there. And he was there within the hour. And I know that's not everybody's situation where the other elders are flexible, but there's another elder there, another pastor elder that was able to come and shepherd them. But to get there, it takes time raising up men. And that's part of bringing them into these situations when appropriate, into the conversation, or asking them. What I like to do is like, hey, I got this text message. I don't mention any names. I'm like, how would you respond to this?
Mm-hmm.
And so that helps them think of caring for other people. Also, it helps me, like, I'm not able to relate to this person right now. So that helps them, serves me too. And I help them. I say, thank you for that. But you have other people that can help you carry the work of ministry, but it's also our responsibility as pastors to equip the church to do the work of the ministry. And I think when you're raising up others, the church loves that just as much, because you're serving one another and to reflect the beauty of Christ.
Yeah. If you think about it, you know, I always love to go back to Acts chapter 6 when that's where we most assume that's kind of the start of deacons. But there's several points in that that I think apply to this discussion. One is the apostles, who would, you know, this equivalent in this situation to the elders, pastors, leaders of the church, recognize, hey, if we start getting into the weeds of everything, we will end up neglecting the primary roles
Correct.
That God has given us of ministry, ministry of the prayer and the word. So our primary roles are prayer and the word.
Yep.
And so, yes, we want to be there. We want to pray for you, but we also need to identify some godly men that can step in and help shoulder that load. And really, as you look at the book of Acts and the early church and even the pastoral epistles, I mean, so primary responsibilities of a pastor are prayer and the word. And then I would honestly say the next two are discipleship and leadership development.
Yep.
So pastor, especially bivocational pastor, focus on those four.
Yep.
Prayer, word, disciple somebody, and start raising up some leaders. And if you got to double dip and disciple somebody and raise them up as a leader at the same time, that's okay.
Yeah.
You can do that. Not every, I will say, I don't think every discipleship opportunity is a leadership development opportunity.
Correct.
I do think there's a nuance there. But I do think leadership development is a form of discipleship, if done correctly. And so you've got to figure out how to decentralize, and make sure you're not the Pope.
Right.
Like you're not the Pope, you're not the bishop, you're not the, like you, you're the, you are a pastor, a shepherd, and others need to be shouldering that load. It's part of what makes it a healthy body is when we're all doing it together.
Yeah. All four, as pastor and shepherds, we understand I'm doing this for the glory of the Lord. I want I want our church to see the good shepherd. And so if it becomes so dependent on me, if they become so dependent on me or a solo guy, then am I directing them to the good and faithful shepherd? This is a question I think about a lot. Like I don't want people to be dependent on me. I want them to know I'm going to be there for them and I'm going to lead them and guide them. And shepherd them well to, the best that I can through the Spirit's work in me. But I don't want them to be dependent on me in such a way that they don't know how to navigate Jesus without me. At that point, then I've done something, I've done something incorrect where I've led them to myself and not to Jesus. I hope that's clear. It is in my head where
that makes sense. I think if I become their hope,
correct,
then I've led them to me.
Correct.
If Jesus becomes their hope, then I've led them to Jesus. And part of the way we do that is by sharing the load and having a plurality of leaders. Yeah. Man, this is a great discussion. Thanks for coming on. How can we be praying for you and your ministry?
Oh, that's a great question. We're our biggest challenge right now is, as you know, we've run out of space where we are. Which it's a great problem to have. And so we're just praying. That's our biggest prayer. Lord, will you open up the next doors, whatever that looks like. On top of that, because of what's been going on, we've brought in a couple guys to begin training up as elders, and we've got a great group of deacons. We call them servant leaders. And so we're just praying for just continual growth in those areas as we continue to share God's grace with every life in Clay County, Florida.
That's awesome. Will you pray for our listeners that
they
will not feel the guilt and pressure, but they will feel the weight of and will lean into wisdom.
Father, what a wonderful, wonderful thing it is to serve you. We're thankful for the calling to shepherd your people, that you would entrust us in this is humbling. And I pray for wisdom and guidance and peace, protection, as we seek to shepherd your people the same way you've shepherded us. Lord, I'm thankful to hear of pastors who are wrestling with this weight of being with their people and also navigating life as a bivocational pastor. It's not easy. And our hearts are torn when we want to be in one place, but we can't. We're reminded of how limited we are, bound by time, pace, can't be anywhere twice and same, can't be more places than once. And I just, Lord, I pray that you'll bring them peace as they wrestle with the weight of pastoral ministry. Lord, help them to know that you hold all things in your hands. The church member that they love dearly, and that they want to be with dearly, Lord, you are holding them and you're with them. So I pray that we won't give in to this temptation that we are the solution, we are the hope, we are the presence that is needed. Lord, we're just a conduit to go and just share your hope, your peace, your presence with the people that we love. We're reminded throughout the scriptures of just your compassion for people. As much as we love the people you've entrusted to us, Jesus, you love them more. And so help us in our weakness. Help us to know your grace is sufficient. I pray that you'll be with every bivocational pastor who's working outside of the ministry of the church, but has a ministry also in the marketplace, Lord, and they want to be in one place and they can't. Lord, I pray that you'll give them strength. Help them to see the joyful calling of bivocational ministry. Give them men and women who can come alongside of them to help them in this work that you've called them to. Help them to see that even though they can't be there and their heart desires to be there, that you're glorified in all of it. We thank you that you are sovereign and in control. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Replant Bootcamp podcast, where listening to the field will lead you to the future. The Replant Bootcamp podcast is brought to you by Church QuickSight by 180 Digital. With Church QuickSight, you'll get a beautiful, customized website with all the features you need to help your church grow, a helpful project manager to make sure everything is just how you want it, and the legendary 180 Digital hosting and support to keep things running great. 180 Digital is a team of design, development, and marketing experts who know and love the local church. So go to churchquicksite.com to learn more and get started.